Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Hebrew nation in the 18th century. The United States' ambition to be a nation in the 18th century. Large topics, and I welcome Juliana Duran-Pilon, senior fellow at the Alexander Hamilton Institute for the Study of Western Civilization. Her new book, An Idea Betrayed, Jews, Liberalism, and the American Left, just published. Writing for the Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute, an observation of the founding fathers and how they saw the Hebrew nation, the Hebrew Bible, the city on a hill, the idea that Israel, as we understand it today, was beyond imagining, but the Hebrew nation was not, and that America followed the Hebrew nation in being founded by an idea, not conquest, an idea, as the Hebrew nation anticipated in the 18th century, an idea. Juliana, congratulations, a very good evening to you. You put together the Hebrew Bible and quotes from the founding fathers. I first rushed to say I was amazed at how they all got in on this with their magical metaphors, especially their ghostwriters. That would be James Madison, for example. They love the language as much as I do, but good heavens, they took their time to say things. First, the idea that they saw the Hebrew nation as an ideal for the American country, for America when and if it was put together. Did they express that routinely, or was it just in a letter writing to each other? Good evening to you.
Thank you, John. It's a real pleasure and honor to be talking to you and your audience. Not only did they not talk merely to one another, the entire nation was talking to itself. It's extraordinary. And in fact, it was through sermons, through all possible channels of communication that they talk to one another. It is indeed a miracle of popular culture understanding the importance of what they are about. And the anthology is so well done. Please don't credit me with putting all of this together. It was the co-editors, especially Wilfred McClay's introduction explains very clearly what the anthology was about. And if you don't mind, I will cite him. He said that what the 21 contributions do is to express America's profound and incalculable debt to the Jews. It is they who provided the deep metaphysical, moral, and anthropological foundation upon which much of the experiment in a democratic self-government was erected, and who have gone to contribute in ways large and small to the soul of America and its making and improving. The Hebrew experience and the Jews surviving against so many odds were an inspiration. It was deep in every regard.
This is the anthology, Jewish Roots of American Liberty, we're addressing.
And correct.
It's surprising how heavy the language is, and so I want to read a piece of it just to understand. Now, this is supposed to be George Washington, but it sure looks like James Madison.
And oh, excuse me. It could be Hamilton.
Ah.
Because Hamilton was really believed to have been the ghostwriter of the farewell address. So are you about to cite the farewell address?
No, I'm going to read the letter to the Savannah, Georgia congregation, Hebrew congregation, 1790.
Well, that could have well, but let's not take anything away from Addison. Go for it.
May the same wonder-working deity who long since delivering the Hebrews from their Egyptian oppressors planted them in the promised land, whose providential agency has lately been conspicuous in establishing these United States as an independent nation, still continue to water them with the dews of heaven and to make the inhabitants of every denomination to participate in the temporal and spiritual blessings of that people whose God is Jehovah. Good heavens.
Well, as a matter of fact, this has been almost exactly what one of the that the rabbi of this congregation had said the day before, because Washington had the amazing habit of going to different denominational churches and, of course, the synagogue whenever he traveled around the country. So he demonstrated his ecumenical approach. But this was something that not even Madison or even Hamilton could have come up with, because it was meant to indicate a oneness with the people, with all the people.
Let's go back to the English Revolution and the regicide of Charles I. Much on the minds of all of them at the time, I think, especially since the English crown was not easily persuaded to give the American colonies up. And though there's romance attached to it, I've recently been reading the second volume in a book about the Civil War, the story of the Civil War, The Fate of the Day, by a distinguished scholar who writes extremely well and is persuasive. The conduct of the British Army in America was appalling. The bayoneting, the beheading, the persecution, the torture, it all went on. The revolution was not two armies meeting each other on a fair field and saluting each other after the success or failure of the day. It was, in often instances, guerrilla warfare. The reason I bring all that up is because it's hard to manufacture today the spirit of despite, just plain spite that the English had for the American colonies in revolt, and that the American colonies genuinely suffered fear. The English choice after a certain disappointment in 77 and 78 was to burn towns, just roll up and down the coastline of America with their superior fleet and wreck a town and don't care whether anybody can eat after that. So I'm struck by how the American founders, having gone through that experience now and having a nation of their own, they can't be confident, Juliana, that the English won't come again. They can't be confident that they're actually safe in their homes. And that's the flavor I feel of how angry they are as the whimsy of the king. Charles I, of course, was beheaded for his whimsy. But George III, I've never read any condemnation of him comparable to what they must have experienced at the time. Am I overreading them? Because they were really very angry.
You're right. It's very interesting how they felt toward George III, because gradually the American colonists began to identify him with Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. Because exactly for the reasons that you mentioned, they began to feel a oneness with the Hebrews who were leaving, who were helped by their God through Moses to leave slavery. And yes, that is how they began to perceive him. This is why, in so many respects, Abraham Lincoln considered himself a second Moses, and why he found himself in a similar position, not as to aggrandize himself. After all, Moses died before he saw the promised land. And how interesting, how symbolic that Lincoln himself was not going to see the ultimate fruits of his incredible leadership.
What is the opinion that you have, the anthology I Do Not I Have, your reading, careful reading, what is the opinion of how Cromwell was regarded by the founders?
Cromwell was had definitely helped the Puritans, no doubt about it. Cromwell was very much an ally, indeed. And there were many people in Britain who were very supportive. I mean, after all, Edmund Burke, who we consider the founder, as some consider the founder of American conservatism, Burke had given a speech in the Parliament on behalf of allowing the colonies to become independent. That was huge. Benjamin Franklin was in contact with his British friends. And Cromwell had, without question, he had been one of our allies. Yes.
I turn to the Benjamin Franklin you mentioned. Benjamin Franklin was not a churchgoer, was not a man who was associated with the Hebrew Bible. I'm surprised to read this sentence in that you've highlighted here. Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. That is, that's a very worshipful remark by Benjamin Franklin. Were you surprised by that? He was such a, let's just say he skipped through lots of different learning systems.
But you see, this is very important to understand, namely that the founders were committed to an ecumenical conception of the Creator. This is one of the reasons why Madison, for example, had said that that freedom of expression is a sacred right. And Benjamin Franklin, without question, was deeply devoted to the notion that there is an architect of our world, a creator of our of humanity as such. All humans were created equal, and they were created by a creator. There wasn't anyone, with a possible exception of Tom Paine, who was not devoted to the higher power.
I'm speaking to Juliana Giran-Pilon, a senior fellow at the Alexander Hamilton Institute for the Study of Western Civilization. We're speaking of an essay she's posted at Civitas Outlook for Civitas Institute. And when we come back, let's bring it up to the 21st century. All well and good in the 18th. It's done in the book. However, right now we're dealing with wars and hatred and anti-Semitism and moral relativism. This is CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.